This is the Space Cowboys panel. It's about space westerns and such, and where they came from, and why is there a minor resurgence in their popularity. My name is Nathan Lilly. I'm a web designer. I've gotten heavily involved in the brown coat movement, and I'm about to launch an e-zine called SpaceWesterns.com.
Woo-hoo. That would explain your interest in this panel, sir. I'm Keith DeCandido. I've written some 30-odd novels. I've got many of them here. I'm not going to show them all off. The only reason why I'm on this panel is actually I've already got a copy of that. But I wrote the novelization of Serenity, the Joss Whedon film. And I'm also actually in the process of doing research on an original fantasy thing that does involve the Old West. It's actually going to be, although it's more mystery than science fiction, involving the character of Calamity Jane. But that's very much in the nascent stages and probably won't turn into a book until sometime later.
I'm Marvin Kay. My edit is HB Lovecraft's Magazine of Horror, which is finally in Barnes & Noble and on schedule.
Terrific.
At least it will be if the next issue does come out next month, as they promised me.
If you don't see it in Barnes & Noble, ask for it by name.
Yes.
And I'm supposed to be editor of Sherlock Holmes Mystery Magazine when Wildside Press decides to actually put the first issue out.
Well, you're the editor of it.
Yeah. Will I continue? It depends if they ever get the first one out, which is now about a year and a half overdue.
Oops.
Yep. Well, what happened, though, is that Steven Seagal, not that one, got hired as managing editor there, and he really is in Curtis decided they would take them on. Okay. With the understanding they'll drop them immediately if they're not on schedule. So this guy has been making it happen. That's how he got Lovecraft, and he said they got to hold off on them as well.
Wow.
He also got them to fire all three editors of Weird Tales to get a younger, newer editor.
And that included
John Betancourt, his boss. Yeah. He said, fire yourself. So he did.
Well,
and I do. My last novel was The Last Christmas of Ebenezer Scrooge, Secret Christmas Carol. This is my two-back anthology, The Fair Folk, which has come out in trade paper, and this won the World Fantasy Award from the other year. I still don't know how. And I got a couple of anthologies.
All those bribes paid off, obviously.
This was the editor's idea. My first thought was, that's not going to be interesting. I was wrong, they were right.
Yeah.
I got one called Witches and, Wizards and Enchanters, which I'm sure they're going to change the title, because I think somebody else has a book with that name coming out.
Don't you hate that?
But it's going to be originals by Kim Newman, Kenneth Lee, Pat McKillop, Holly Phillips, Margaret Weiss, and Peter S. Beagle. I'm thrilled about that. And just finished a one for Tor Books called The Ghost Quartet with Brian Lumley, Kenneth Lee, Scott Card, and at Kenneth Lee's invitation, I was happy to say, me.
Oh, wow.
Wrote a new thing I've written in a while, a novella called The Haunted Single Malt.
Oh,
that's what you're going to think.
Yeah.
Martin, that's really, it sounds like your rocket is heading for the wide open spaces.
I don't know. Well, it feels like, a couple of years ago they asked me to be World Fantasy Judge. And somebody said, why? Because it's so many things. Yeah, I said, to remind people I'm still alive.
Did it work?
So
I think so.
I am Ernest Lilly, not to be confused with Nathan Lilly.
Because every panel must have at least two Lillies on
it. That's right. We toil not, nor do we weep. So my name is spelled Lilley, not the derivative spelling. Lilly?
Lilly.
There you go. I think Keith's the only non-editor on the panel. Well, no, but you've done a panel.
No, I'm an editor.
So you're, what's your, well...
I'm still an editor. I edit the monthly Star Trek ebook line.
So we're nothing but editors. I'm the editor of SF Review, which is a decade old this year, which is science fiction reviews on the web. Gumshoe, which has come up in the last year or so, which is mystery reviews. It's going very nicely. So we'll look forward to hearing about your Sherlock Holmes.
Absolutely.
And Tech Review, which is really just a forum where I can do short pieces on the articles I'm actually writing for the publications, because being a tech journalist is what I actually do. Hey, if you've got content, you should leverage it.
That's absolutely.
So, and I'm on the panel because if I was in the audience, I'd know you even more.
I doubt that somehow.
No, I'd know the panel even more.
Oh, okay.
Here, at least the moderator can say, we'll get to you.
Yeah, but would you actually listen to this advice? Or?
He's a Lily.
Yeah, you guys got to stick together.
It's fairly common, though, so it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's give this panel some direction.
There's a thought.
Yeah.
Leave the room.
What is a cowboy, Eddie?
It's a cowboy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are the characters?
Well, it depends. I mean, at this point, a cowboy means something different from what it started out as. I mean, it's come up to pretty much epitomize, guy in the West with hat and long brown coat with shotgun.
That's an excellent start. And the Firefly characters are cowboys, but...
And a horse, yes.
Yeah. Well, the horse fisher.
Well, I'm talking about just the general mass populace idea of what constitutes a cowboy, and that usually involves a horse.
What do you think?
But
we're cowboys.
Of course.
What makes a thing or a person a cowboy?
Now I think what he said is right. It's become a legendary figure, like a knight errant. In fact, I remember one review of Shane first came out. Sure. This is actually Sir Galahad.
Yeah. The difference between the knight errant and the cowboy is whether or not their code of ethics is codified. The cowboy is a person who believes in right and wrong and is not really concerned about that consequence. Okay.
Well, actually, I think it's a better analog
than that, because you have outlaws who are cowboys and
it's
a full range.
Well, the heroic part is
the black knight versus the
anti-hero cowboy. But really, when we say a person is a cowboy, there are different means. But when we say a person is a cowboy, what we mean is that they go off in their own direction without building a consensus of opinions from other people to find out what's possible or practical. They do the right thing.
Right. Well,
so for instance, but by their lights. For instance, we currently have a cowboy president. Okay, he marches to the beat of his own drums. He's not looking for. See, in his own mind, he's doing the right thing. Whether or not anybody agrees with him is less important. That's one of the attributes of cowboys.
I think actually a better analog to a knight errant, rather than a knight errant, would be the Japanese model of Ronin, masterless samurai.
Yes.
And there's a reason why a lot of samurai movies were easily translated into westerns.
And this works very nicely, Nathan, with your Brown Coats.
Yeah, and right. Seven Samurai, the Magnificent Seven, and actually Yojimbo more directly, Fistful of Dollars. Fistful of Dollars is a remake of Yojimbo.
The hero almost instant for instant. The only thing that wouldn't work is in Yojimbo. They're all fighting with swords, and he brings a pistol in, and that really tension goes up.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't have that in the Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah, but that was
Firefly, right? Your lead character is very much cowboy in that he's much more concerned about what he thinks about his own values than about social issues. Right. He believes in personal freedom and valor, right? And not so much about whether or not the trade lanes stay open.
Yeah.
Right. So that's...
And there's a reason why Westerns, usually the hero is not the sheriff or the marshal. It is sometimes.
No.
And when they are, they're usually...
In High Noon, he's going against the group.
Yeah, or, the historical example of the Earps, who are going against a well-entrenched family.
Electric Cowboy is a nice example of this. He's not a pragmatic person. He's a value-driven person to the exclusion of all else. And I think this is one of the things that science fiction glommed onto, and one of the reasons why the cowboy in science fiction, right, is a recurrent figure. Because as people here, we are interested in values. And the fact that values don't always make for cohesive society are really issues we'd rather not come to grips with, at least certainly not in Golden Age SF.
Well,
what were you going to say, Nam?
Didn't the science fiction genre grow out of Westerns in part?
Absolutely. It's the easiest elevator conversation you can have, especially in media, right? It's like, it's like Wagon Train to the stars.
Which of course wasn't what Star Trek actually was. It was Hornblower in space, but the NBC executives wouldn't know Hornblower for a bit of their asses.
But the elevator conversation would have had to be, it's Wagon Train.
And Westerns were popular, so that's how we pitch it.
Yeah.
But
there's a classic ad in the old Galaxy magazine, remember the back page?
Yes.
That column was describing a scene from a Western. The right side was the same scene set in science fiction terms. And they said, we'll never see that in Galaxy. Which of course you did.
You did.
Now that's something.
But also there's the in both science fiction and in Westerns you have the frontier element, or you can anyway. I mean there's other ways to go with Westerns and there's other ways to go with science fiction, but in both cases you very easily have a setting where you've got people who are tangentially connected to a greater whole but are still very much on their own.
Yeah.
You know, the a lot of the Western towns were isolated and had to make their own law because it was still, there were still territories,
still not even states.
Exactly. And it's that's a very easy thing to translate over into science fiction with colony planets or what have you. You can instill the same sort of, the rich people who run the town and therefore make the law themselves because they've got the money. The cowboy who's the archetypal, rebel with the cause who Ernest said, does what's right rather than what's necessarily illegal.
A figure tangentially connected to that is the mountain man, right? Who also figures well in science fiction. Mythology. The difference between the mountain man and the cowboy, I think, in stories, is the cowboy generally has a vendetta, right? Whereas the Mountain Man generally does not have a vendetta, although, you know, the Sioux may have killed his entire family and right. he's out after somebody, but... And that,
also, the Cowboys bathe more often.
But the Cowboys and most importantly, the Cowboys dally with horses. So, with horses and horses, so... Yes.
And the Cowboys also shave.
Yeah, so it's... So
they can tell the difference. The Mountain Man's one with the beard.
Right, so the Cowboys are clearly urbanized Mountain Men.
Yeah.
I'm just reading the novel, which pretty much follows what you just said. Just realize it. the Garden of Rama, the third of the Rama, books of Upper Sea Clark and Gentry Lee, they develop an entire new colony on a Rama spaceship called New Eden, and they set it up really nice. All the good guys have correct grammars. It's going to be a model place. And then the criminals and the gamblers come in, and they turn part of it into Las Vegas, and they're destroying the ecology and the atmosphere, and one guy has got to go outside into the spaceship, escape to become the vigilante. I don't know how he's going to do it yet, but to be able to put things back.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens on the space station and stays on the space station.
You can take the boy out of the cesspool, but you can't take the cesspool out of the boy.
God knows we've tried. But one of the reasons also why I think you see a lot of space westerns is because mixing genres is fun, you know. It's not as easy a fit as some others, but because both of them are very much setting-based, but it's still, you know, taking the conventions of one genre and mixing it with the conventions of another genre, just from a writer's perspective, is a fun thing to do. You know, let's, you know, and that was part of the appeal of, to mention two examples that are in the topic description, and we may as well use the topic description at least occasionally, both Firefly and Cowboy Bebop.
Yes.
Are both cases where you're mixing the tropes of the two of them, and that sort of thing is just fun for its own sake, to at least a certain extent. You know, having you know, Serenity load up with a whole bunch of cattle and then fly out into space.
You also had the same thing in Outland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, Outland was the direct cop of High Noon, yeah.
Or for that matter, the, what the hell was the name of it, the really awful science fictional version of The Seven Samurai and the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
Battle Beyond the Stars, thank you.
Which even had Robert Vaughn.
Which was the Picard character was actually a space cowboy.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, it was the exact same plot as Seven Samurai and the Magnificent Seven, only in space.
Or open channel D.
Yes, one thing here is sort of which you may not be aware of. In the pulp days, you had writers writing for both science fiction magazines and for westerns.
Mm-hmm. And for whoever else would pay them in money.
So the writers would say, well, this thing didn't sell to thrilling westerns. I'm going to change a few things and make it into a science fiction novel. Like you had Edmund Hamilton wrote a story,
right.
Son of Two Worlds. Okay, first scene, they're hunting a Martian sand dragon. Substitute buffalo for it. The hero is a half-breed. His father was Zerg. His mother was Martian. He's living among the drylanders. Substitute cowboys and Indians. An Earth man is trying to cheat them. Substitute railroad magnate. Then even somebody with a bigger name as Robert Silverberg wrote a story called Journey's End. Opening scene, the guy is riding into a village on his riding beast. Substitute horse for riding beast. The village of drylanders.
You know, it's just a good thing they didn't have word processors in those days.
Yeah.
You could have seen, we could have had a whole bunch of stories with global word replaces.
All the Mad Libs.
To get to the point of Mad Libs, William Wallace Cook, author in the 20s through the 40s.
And liberator of Scotland.
Different William Wallace. William Wallace Cook wrote a book called Plotto, which was the book of master plots. And
he said that wrong. With that title, you have to say it right. Plotto. The exclamation
master plots. Yes.
But it was essentially going through the tree to choose your plots, and you all the different types of characters that could appear in a plot, and they actually created software maybe 5 years ago based on that. And what you could do is take the same general plot and put in Martian, cowboy, whatever.
That's going to put me out of work, man.
For some reason, I think Keith may know this. Scott Edelman wrote a short meta story, which I read recently somewhere. I can't remember where, but it was absolutely terrific. It starts out with, this is the first line of the story, right? that grabs you and hooks you and pulls you in. And then it goes and it tells the story in sort of narrative form as to each, what each line does. And by gosh, it works. So,
sounds like the Austin Angels are grunge song.
Ethan Lee Brackett, who a lot of us very highly respect, Rylanders, Asteroid Miners. Yeah.
Well, it's real easy to, you know, like I said, the it's fun to mix the tropes, but also it's very easy to translate the tropes from one to the other.
And this is
this signifies the difference between.
Yeah, these guys had to eat, you know.
This signifies the difference between a Bat Durston and a space western. I think is that with a Bat Durston, you're trying to hide the fact that it actually was a western, whereas with a lot of the space westerns, they're pulling in the elements and proudly displaying them.
One of the important elements is the buddy aspects. I mean, all the B-Westerns that I was made to watch when I was a kid.
Right.
The bad is it for them to get to the horror movies.
I was going to say, did somebody like, you will watch these now?
But my sister, I just found out from her, she pinned it down. I was 4.5 to 5 years old. She had graduated early and couldn't get a job in Pennsylvania until she was 18, so she just took me to the movie constantly. It was right across the street. And I got to hate Western so quick. But it's the same rock. Wait, it's the same plot. Yeah. And most are the same actors.
Yeah.
But the one thing that did appeal
to me, the same budgets to win
money. They had three guys who were a unit character, so to speak. And of course, you can trace that to Lord of the Rings in the fellowship. Yeah. Usually the hero and his young sidekick and the scruffy comedy character. Sometimes four. The first one I remember reading like that was the first of Jack Williamson's Legion of Space stories, which has four characters that are really are a unit.
Yeah.
They all complement each other in life.
Well, I like the spaghetti westerns myself. I think spaghetti westerns are interesting because they started out, you know, as such a cheap derivative genre, right, and developed such legs.
They
made Clint Eastwood, right? You know, and Clint Eastwood made them something really worth.
Yeah, they were the western equivalent of the Hammer films. Really, it was, you know, just trying to turn out as many of the same movie over and over again as possible, and it wound up, yeah, like you said, being much more than that, as some of the Hammer films managed also.
So we know why writers like to combine the genres, because it's easy to steal, fun to mix, right? You know, and one of the questions is, well, but they wouldn't do it if it didn't sell. Right?
Well, they don't sell that well.
They don't sell that well.
That's the thing. I mean,
Do they not sell that well anymore?
Huh?
Do they not sell that well anymore?
I don't think they ever did. I mean, there's been it's more of a niche market, I think. It's not something that's really broken out into a major mainstream thing the same extent as others. I mean, Firefly is a classic example of that. It achieved a wonderfully devoted and intensely loyal cult following, but it's not a very big cult following in mass market terms.
Those people are all psychotic, you know.
No, they're not.
You know what? It's
only about half of them.
There are two.
And besides, they bought my book, so shut up. but no, for that matter, you know, stuff like Cowboy Bebop or some of the other stuff has a really intense following, but it's still not.
Okay, would somebody tell me how Cowboy Bebop is cowboy? Spigula is Ronan?
Spike. The cowboy in this world is slang for a bounty hunter, and they pulled in the cowboy themes on the show within a show, Roundup.
Been a while since I've seen
it. Well, I don't have that excuse. I just watched it last week.
Well, then you're more pathetic than I am then.
Yes.
But I mean the
spoiler.
Right. No, he doesn't. He gets shot multiple times. It falls over.
Yeah.
but he didn't die. No, really. It hasn't. I mean, Firefly is a classic example. It didn't do well enough in mass market terms to succeed on a network, which is ironic because it's the type of show that would have succeeded on cable, but it was far too expensive to be produced on cable.
We can actually argue that point because I believe it had better ratings than the first season of Buffy.
Welcome to the
but it was more expensive to make than Buffy by a damn sight. That was the problem. The standards for success on Fox are much higher than they were on the WB.
But Keith,
are you saying Fox has standards?
Rating standards, yes. I'm talking financial.
It's more expensive to set up than Buffy. Was it more expensive to run once they built the props?
Yes.
There was a lot of CGI work that they had to do that they didn't have to do.
And again, Fox.
Can't you just go buy that planet again?
Yeah. And also, like I said, Fox had much higher standards for numerical standards for success than the WB does. I mean, you look at now the CW. If you look at the ratings charts, the CW shows are all at the bottom because they're in fewer markets, so they don't need to. So yeah, of course, every show on Fox has higher ratings than the worst show on Fox has higher ratings than the best show on the WB.
Right. The best thing that happened
in terms, again, numerically,
was that it got canceled and that they only made one movie. Because if they had worked it as a franchise that they wanted to keep going, they would have had to mass market it, right? And then it would have stopped being Firefly, and you would have hated that.
Well, look at Star Trek. They canceled Star Trek. Was it a season and a half in?
Two, three.
Well, the first time they canceled it.
The first time they canceled it.
Yeah. As opposed to the second time they canceled it, yes.
Oh, the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, now, maybe a series, Space Western, needs to be canceled before people notice.
Well, except they...
Maybe it's a ghost town. Maybe everybody's left there because it's already been done.
Well, there was a series called Space Rangers they tried that with, and that was CBS.
That had a shorter lifespan than Firefly did. Yeah. It was also really bad.
So they tried.
Yeah. So if we had a Hartwell or a Nielsen Hayden here, they'd be saying these things aren't science fiction anyway, because they need to have a necessarily science fictional premise in the story.
It did. Firefly did, yeah.
How could that not have been translated directly into Westerns?
Well, it was, yeah.
It's a subcategory of fantasy, so it doesn't.
Well, science fiction is fantasy with bolts on it.
There you go. Yeah. But I mean, it's based on the science fictional premise of really colonizing another solar system.
Even beyond that, the whole
actual issue with that,
the river plot. And all the mind control. I can't imagine that being done in a Western.
I understand that that's where you're going. However, right, and much as I love the river plot, right, the river plot wasn't Firefly.
Yes, it was.
That wasn't the core Firefly.
It was the one recurring theme throughout almost every episode, and it was the focus of the movie.
It was the continuing string they pulled.
Yeah.
Right.
It was the spine.
There were other parts. I think the cowboy saga was the essence of the Civil War writ in space,
that was the core of
Firefly. And this other thing was, yeah, it's nice to have a story arc somewhere.
Well, it was the same. It's the same thing you get in the Westerns. It's the same thing you get in the Japanese films, which is
Captain and the Hooker with a Cart of Gold had no chemistry whatsoever.
No,
please.
But it's still, you know, Mal is the same archetype that you get in. That Clint Eastwood was in the spaghetti westerns, that Toshirô Mifune was in the Kurosawa films, is, you know, the guy who...
Ironically, the doctor and the hooker would have hooked up nicely, and Mel could hook up the engineer. We're going to save the show.
What if something that's been off a science fiction version of Zatoichi? I think is the most interesting of the...
Science fiction version of what?
Zatoichi.
Boy, I don't like Shorts.
It's another Ronin...
They made almost 30 of them.
Yeah, including a team up with Yojimbo.
Yeah, Zatoichi versus Yojimbo.
Yeah, I thought it was Beats Yojimbo. Depends on how you translate it, I guess. They are technically against each other, and they're
hired by Ragnar. But they both have moral centers, so they're going to survive somehow.
But Mal is that same kind of character. He's the person who is less concerned with what's legal than what's right, which I think is one of the defining characteristics of your cowboy.
Spirit of the law, not the letter of the law.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the one great thing about Zatoichi that's different is because, you know, he's a masseur, and he's taught himself to be a terrific swords person. He doesn't know, but you know that the people he's trusting are sons of bitches. And one of them tries to kill him at the end of the film, and he just kills the guy, he doesn't know it was one of the guys he really liked. Never finds that out. Just said, oh, it must have been some scum, and walks off. The dramatic irony is, that to me is unique in these films.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the things that kept the series going, because you don't see that element. And yeah, you're right. It would be interesting to see.
The interesting thing that I don't see in the cowboy in space is I don't see the cowboy try to come to grips with this conflict, that acting out of value set, right, isn't necessarily good for the general good. Right? I don't see, you know...
You see that in Westerns?
No. But I think that's why the cowboy in space has a limited life, because he doesn't come to grips with this. And I think that we, as a culture, whether fandom or the larger culture, I think that we recognize that you have to, the oversimplification of life, to do the right thing and it all works out, is just more simple than we can actually get away with. Much as we'd like to live that way.
And yet fiction has lived off that for millennia.
I think the parts of science fiction which are not living off that, right, largely, British writers.
For the moment.
And some Canadians.
Yeah.
You know, but,
damn Canadians.
All those Trotskyites.
Yeah.
You know?
I think your comment is valid, but I think it depends on the...
Yeah, we're certainly not going to let that happen again.
the most
popular...
Yeah.
I mean, it goes through cycles of people want to read what... the good guy wins no matter what, and then it goes through the, okay, we got to have severe realism, and the good guy is going to get killed in the end because he did the right thing, kind of.
Interestingly, that we're looking at, some of the cycles we're looking at that are the outgrowth of modernism into postmodernism and into whatever we are now, and what kind of values the society has. But I really think that, I really do think that our understanding of ethics is evolutionary, in the sense that I think it's filtering to the larger part of the population, largely due to media, comes to grip with ethical questions more readily than they used to. Part of the indication of that is that there's such an attempt to clamp down on it. You know, that's sort of the reaction to it. But I think that people, there was a time when you could say, people, if you introduced science fictional concepts to the general public, they would not get it. They'd say, huh? But now anybody gets science fictional concepts. They know about spaceships and galaxies and all this stuff.
There have been plenty of science fictional concepts that have been introduced in the past, though. I mean, Frankenstein was an immensely popular novel when it was released. You know, for that matter, Gilgamesh.
it was just in the Bible first. So yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, but there's always been, at least to some degree, you know, fantastical elements of some kind in fiction going back as far as you.
All right, Mr. Wiseacre, Keith R. A. Deacon, did you say something clever?
Why? I'd much rather. Pick apart what you say. That's much more fun. But I mean, you're certainly right in that. Ethics do evolve. I was always amused watching when Hercules and Xena were on the air, and the characters would rail against slavery. Nobody in ancient Greece would rail against slavery. It was nobody even thought of it as a bad thing. The idea of slavery as a bad thing is in terms of civilization a very recent phenomenon.
Slavery, as a matter of fact, was decouple it from the ethical consideration. It was probably the most powerful piece of technology that mankind ever came up with, because it allowed them to organize groups of people which had never had organization before.
But by the same token, a show being produced at the end of the 20th century couldn't possibly have done anything different from what they did. You couldn't have them saying, oh yeah, slaves are fine, because, you know, nobody, no current audience, would react well to that.
One of the ironies of labels is that when we vilify a label, we make ourselves unable to come to grips with reality. Because slavery exists worldwide, even in the United States, but we can't call it slavery. We have to find other ways to think of it.
Minimum wage.
So we have peasant classes and we have slaves and stuff. But because those are bad things, we obviously don't have them, which makes it hard for us to actually come to grips with having a class stratified society.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So we're dealing with in space westerns. We're dealing with what?
Oh right, space westerns.
Attached to a period where slavery ended in the United States, and I haven't seen any space westerns deal with that issue. Have there been any?
No, I think you're right. I think that it's such a hot button. And the tragedy is that when we say slavery, we don't mean slavery. We mean black slavery in the United States.
Right.
Whereas slavery throughout mankind's history, I don't think that there's a person in the room who belongs to an ethnic group which has not experienced slavery, probably from both sides. So I know the Romans gave my people heck.
The only thing that comes immediately to mind in this fantasy is the the house elf situation in the Harry Potter books.
Yes.
Which the movies left out so far. Yeah, maybe they'll get to it. I don't know. Probably they won't put it in.
Well, they would have to put it in for, well, this is turning into Harry Potter, but they would have to put it in in the book where...
See, they could get it in there.
Harry Potter.
Okay, so has anybody seen any space westerns other than Star Trek or Firefly?
One occurred to me, but it's actually not science fiction, it's fantasy, but the cartoon Ice Age. Mm-hmm. It's a spin-off of the old John Wayne movie, Three Godfathers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Fuck! Yeah. It took me a while into the movie to say, this is looking awfully familiar, all might.
I mean, I was just looking at your standard, you know, journey story, you know, which you know, follows some fairly standard tropes, which didn't make it any less enjoyable. And I felt so sorry for that chipmunk.
Fucking gag chipmunk, yes.
Well, let's see. Quark was after
Quark?
I'm glad somebody got that.
Yes, Quark was a tragically short-lived 70s science fiction show starring Richard Benjamin.
Plays James T. Kirk.
In essence, yeah. Except he wrote the Garbage Scout.
Remember the Star Trek episode where somebody called the Enterprise a Garbage Scout?
Yeah, the Garbage
Scout. Well, Richard Benjamin was captain of a Garbage Scout.
Yeah, yes, and every single sound effect was lifted from Star Trek, except it was used for something different. And, you know, you had your emotionless character, you had a guy who...
The science officer was a vegetable.
He was a plant.
Yeah.
Named Ficus.
Ficus.
Yes. And they even did a Mirror Universe episode where they're evil counterparts, except for Ficus, because there are no good plants or bad plants, they're just like plants. And
I keep waiting for it to show up on DVD.
I know. I have this really crappy old VHS copy of it that I got at a convention years ago. But that was beautiful. Yeah, that was F Troop. It really was F Troop.
Yeah.
I never thought of that, but
my favorite F Troop line is, "Where the heck are
we?" Yes.
Yeah.
How about anime? Anyone? Can we get Cowboy Bebop, Trigon, Outlaw Star?
Yeah, who's the guy who keeps roaming from town to town? I forgot. I got nothing.
Oh, no, that was...
I got nothing.
You're thinking of Kung Fu.
No, this isn't an anime. No, that's the anime. I'm not the anime. Okay.
I am Kane. I can help you.
And it's amazing what I can fit in this one little bag. I have an endless supply of eagles.
Yes.
Okay, so is Space 1999 Fort Apache?
It's all space.
That makes me have to actually remember Space 1999, for which I will kill you later.
Yeah, there was a horrible moment in Space 1999.
There were several, actually, but which one are you talking about?
Well, where aliens come to the base, and they're psychically projecting human personas at people.
Right.
But the thing that I took away from that episode, back whenever it was there was a guy was doing a video documentary for the base, and he was holding this absurd camcorder. Let's get serious. He was holding this little thing that was about the size of a contemporary camcorder. It's like, and it looked exactly like the little things. Even had a little swing out window.
Really?
Like that. Yeah, it was like, wow. It's like this little trigger thing with a little window on it. And he's going like this, and I'm going like, yeah, it looks so phony. It's like, okay, so well.
Oh, wait a minute. There's one novel James Caan wrote at KAHN.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, not Steven Seagal.
It came out from Del Rey. It had a yellow cover on it, but it was The Searchers, rewritten into a futuristic setting.
So what's Shane rewritten into a futuristic setting? Keith, quick!
I don't know.
You've got a book.
I can't think of one offhand.
Enoch!
Mad Max 2, Road Warrior.
There you go. Yeah,
regular.
Yeah, actually.
Well, you know, his family was killed by Indians or Australians.
Right, same difference.
he rode his faithful steed or turbocharged wreck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, the Mad Max
small
was very much.
Port, or petroleum depot. Yeah.
How about space western stories and novels like Andre Norton, Beastmaster series, C.L. Moore, anything else?
Well,
there's got to come on. Someone's got to know about books and stories.
Well,
there's evidence in here.
Which
world?
Yes.
Which books?
Which world?
Which world?
Which world?
There's certainly a lot of the going native thing, you know, the western, the aliens as Indians metaphor kind of thing. There's certainly a lot of that.
Those Mars books too.
Tarzan
or the Mars books are like a western.
Yes. Yeah. Do they start out in the west?
Yeah, they do.
Being chased
by...
You fall asleep in the right...
That was Burroughs?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mars
Tell. And then there was, I forget the names of them, but Michael Moorcock did a series that were spun off from the railroads.
Cane of Mars.
Was that it? Yeah.
Much be confused with Pod Cane of Mars.
Yes. So what wasn't a space western? Lost in Space. The premise of Lost in Space made our. We've got a wagon train. We got separated from our. Well, one pound stone of wagon got separated, and we can't find California.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. if you take that as your plot premise, well, that actually works pretty well. They wander all over the Midwest looking for it.
Yeah. And encounter a whole bunch of Indians dressed as who look like carrots.
And who's the robot? What Western character does the robot?
Cookie.
Walter Brennan.
Indians approaching! Danger! Danger!
You know, I saw a wonderful version back, they're doing it again, but in Central Park in New York, they did Shakespeare in the Park. They're doing it again, but for a while, they were going through all 37 plays, and one year they did Taming of the Shrew as a Western.
Fiction. That would be good.
Oh, and
yeah. Sorry,
39. Is it 39? My apologies.
Because there are two apocryphals that are pretty much accepted now as real.
Okay, but they didn't do those. They only did the 30s. So they didn't
get around with them.
They probably will. Well, in this case, they did the Taming of the Shrew as a Western with Morgan Freeman and Tracy Ullman, and it was hysterical. And they got this guy who I swear looked and sounded just like Walter Brennan. He opened up the movie, stepping out onto the balcony of this Western town and saying, "Welcome to Padua." It was great.
Actually, the first production I saw Much Ado About Nothing was. Also a Western. Mm. This was Alfred Drake as Benedict, and Beatrice was Katharine Hepburn.
Ooh.
It was incredible. And Dogberry was a drunk red-nosed sheriff with badge. Don John was Alvin Black villain. Yeah.
And just back from the war? Yeah, that could work.
God. Yeah. Robots, we can't forget Westworld.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
With Yul Brynner dressed exactly as he was in
The Magnificent Seven.
Right.
with circuitry.
I don't think it's science fiction Western, but not even Western.
We reject that. Lost in Space is more of a Western than that is.
Well, they had hats in Westworld.
It's definitely, it's not a space Western.
Yeah, but it had robots and cowboy hats.
Right, but it could have been called Dinosaur World.
Yes, it could have, except then they wouldn't have had cowboy hats. Because the cowboy hats would look really silly on a Tyrannosaurus.
Well, there was also Medieval World, and I mean, you know, Westworld wasn't just Westworld. So, no, I'm sorry, we reject Westworld as a Western.
So did lots of people, so, you know.
I like pulling in the Western elements, but it was the fact that it was a West theme park. It could have been any theme park.
Although the one thing about Westworld, which speaks to my Rogue Ronin thing, is like, Westworld is clearly a place where doing the right thing will just get you killed. You know, everybody advised, you've got to look at the situation, you've got to adapt to the situation in Westworld, which is why it's not a Western, because Richard Benn...
Although that does make it science fiction very much.
Yes, it's definitely science fiction.
Because it assumes that people will actually think their way out of a problem. So, who was the other male lead in that? Benjamin was one, right?
James Brolin.
James Brolin, that's right.
What about any science fiction stories written during that period, the Western period? So we're talking...
During the 1800s?
Most of the science fiction that was written in that time frame was there was a lot of socialist utopian.
Yeah, they were written
most of the fiction that actually dealt with the West were the original cowboy stories, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no need for the space Western.
Yeah.
Mike Resnick, of course, said Iago is, he's a very Western character. As a matter of fact, he's the archetypical Western character. Santiago, the guy you can't kill because he doesn't really exist.
That would make it
hard. He's just a legend. You know, but somebody has to assume the legend.
There's one by William Rotzler. It's called The Far Frontier. It even advertises on the cover, Space Western.
Well, you know, why beat around the bush?
What about Battlestar Galactica?
There's certainly an element of it. You know, the wagon train element is there.
Yeah.
And it's more in the original because you had less. Because honestly, the original was less depressing. But yeah, there's that element of leaving behind everything you know to go out into the great unknown.
How many dog years was the original on?
It was on one plus Galactica. 1980, which we try to forget about. Even people who liked Galactica try to ignore Galactica 1980.
There was actually one episode of Battlestar Galactica that was actually a remake of Shane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not only that, but when the same producer made Tales of the Gold Monkey, he recycled the exact same story.
Why not? Yeah. how many TV shows have done Rashomon at this point? You know.
Every Christmas, how many TV shows they do with It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, yeah. Probably the two most remade stories on television are those two movies, and they're both made around the same time too. I think. What was It's a Wonderful Life? 47?
Sounds good.
Yeah. Rashomon was 1950, but
was also remade as a Western. Yeah. The Outrage.
Yeah. Right. Although that didn't work nearly as well as other Kurosawa Western remakes. My favorite is The Seven Samurai, which Kurosawa specifically made as a tribute to Westerns, and then turned around and became basis of half the Westerns in the world.
Yeah, it is interesting seeing how Second Order. Art can wind up reaffecting the genre. We're now in a period where written science fiction is so heavily affected by media science fiction.
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, sure, there are people who aren't, but no, our work's not done here yet. Yeah.
He was making sure he was still recording.
No, he was just hoping we were out of time.
I was wondering if we were
the long
where we were on
this desert.
We've got about 10 minutes. We can take questions.
Okay.
Yeah, there's one thing we haven't mentioned.
Or we can let Ernest talk some more.
Claim jumping. You know, there's a lot of stuff about asteroid mining in science fiction. Not so much in movies, but there was certainly.
Because it's expensive to film.
Yeah.
Seriously,
the CGI will get cheaper on the rocks.
Right? Yeah. It's actually that's one thing, you know, with filmed westerns, you know, filmed space westerns, is that you can always substitute the California desert for an alien planet.
You know, the first time I went to California, which was within the last decade, I got that for the first time. I looked at the desert, mm-hmm. and I looked at all the stuff, and I even looked at, you know, the piers, and I went like, my God, this place is science fiction set. They were just writing about what they saw, and it just seemed alien to us East Coasters.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, the California desert looks much more like an alien planet than the woods outside Vancouver, mm-hmm. which is the second most common site of an alien planet now.
Yeah, well, okay.
Bronson Canyon.
Just when you're saying we're not in Kansas anymore, you are.
No, you're actually probably in Vancouver. But
yeah, that was tragic.
Yeah.
But you know, just glad they left Egypt.
Yeah.
Is Stargate SG-1 a Western?
Not remotely.
Atlantis comes closer, actually, because there's the frontier
Fort
element.
Apache, yeah.
Yeah.
Fort Apache, surrounded by water on another planet.
But I'm just thinking in terms of the characters. You know, Weir is the sheriff, and Shepard is the cowboy in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Ronan is the big dumb sidekick, and McKay is the comic relief character. Yeah.
No, Shepard is the sheriff. Weir's the mayor. It's a progressive town.
I suppose.
So I think
okay. Well, are we ready to open up the questions now? Questions?
This one's here from the Harlock series, which pretty much puts almost everything together in one go.
Harlock is more pirate than Western, but yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, you take a buccaneer and you put him in the Western. You take the man science fiction, make him a Ronin, and you've got something right here.
As long as you're mixing genres, anyway.
Yeah, right. May as well.
They did that in Briscoe County Junior one episode. They had like the pirates raiding town.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chris, oh God! Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that.
There was a Western science fiction. Yeah. There was a Western science fiction.
Briscoe County was more of a Western with science fiction elements, as opposed to the other way around. But
It was a slip Western strain.
Yeah. I totally forgot about Briscoe. I love that show.
Yeah.
When you look at it, what's the difference between Malcolm Reynolds and Harlock? I mean, they're both kind of.
Harlock has an eye patch.
Yeah. Well, he looks more like a pirate.
Yeah.
So he doesn't use a gun as often.
And I'm not sure if there is one, but it has been said the John Wayne movie, Red River, is really a Western version of Mutiny on the Bounty. Do we have a science fiction Mutiny on the Bounty?
There probably is. I'm not thinking of one now.
Do we have a science fiction Big Black Mark by A. Bertrand Chandler? Chronologically, the first of the Grimes stories. In fact, the spaceship in there is called the Bounty.
Mm.
Uh-huh. The remake I'd like to see, or the science fictional remake I'd like to see, the Key Mutiny in space.
Mm.
Yeah.
It'd have to be a Star Trek thing.
Well, various Star Trek stories and Star Trek novels have done riffs on that sort of thing in the past. But
I was actually reading on the Wikipedia article for space westerns that someone is including StarCraft. Yeah, that's what I said.
Actually, okay, I can see that. StarCraft is a video game from Blizzard, the lesser known video game from the people who do World of Warcraft. And they're, yeah, again, the frontier elements, you know, that they're going out and instead of Indians, they come across aliens. Oh, but
yeah, but at that point, the gun's on the other foot.
But, yeah, I mean, they're with it, not as much. I mean, there's an argument to be made, but it's...
It's a lot more subtle.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain elements that it shares.
But. So does the Western in space have a future?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't people getting tired of this one storyline over and over again?
Apparently not. Just when you thought the Western was dead, Unforgiven came around, and then they thought it was dead again, and Deadwood came around, you know. I mean, all it takes is somebody doing it really well to spark interest in it again.
And medical shows and stuff like that. Are,
yeah.
Popular,
yeah.
Well, medical shows, you know. I mean, well, that's interesting.
I'd like to see.
But like I said, all it takes is somebody doing it well to spark interest in it again. You know, I mean, the part of the interest in Westerns right now is at least in part, I mean, Deadwood isn't hugely popular. I mean, it's popular on HBO, but that's a small fish.
Yeah.
A small pond, rather. But
small fish in a big pond.
Yes, but that's part of, you know, keeping it in the public interest. And as long as, and no genre is completely dies out, I don't think.
Has any genre ever.
Well, and when it does, and when you think it's dead, it comes back.
You can't, so. Well, you can't kill the genre.
No.
You can go into hiatus.
If I meant to kick you, I would have done it
much harder. But you,
genres aren't.
Well, I'm waiting to see the first reality space western TV show.
we've got a reality superhero show, so...
Actually, there have been quite a number of parodies. Someone did a Star Trek. It was a Survivor, Alpha Centauri, or something like that.
Was that the English one?
You mean the Marvel Comics series?
I don't know.
The reality, yeah.
It's not Marvel. It's, I mean, Stan's involved with it, but it's not Marvel.
Dark Horse.
It's just Stan.
Dark Horse are people who did the comic book.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, it was originated from sci-fi, yeah. And with Stan, not from any specific company. I didn't realize Dark Horse were doing the tie-ins. But anyway, we're pretty much out of time, and I got to go to another panel. So.
Okay.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you for coming.
You've been a lovely audience.